It's NHL Fantasy on Ice, an NHL Studios production with Rob Reese and Pete Jensen.
What's good, everybody? Thursday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're here talking mailbag questions. We're looking at our updated fantasy rankings for week six of the NHL season. And we're bringing on Nick Alberga to look big picture at the league so far this season. What's going on, everybody?
What's up, Nick? Welcome back to the show, my man. How you been?
I've been great, guys. Took the plunge last night. Was sweating all night because I have Thatcher Demko, I have Darcy Kuemper. I decided to put them against each other, and I'm happy with a 3-2 hockey game. At least it wasn't 18 goals against the Canucks last night. So,
well, the Avs have certainly been turning it around despite all their injuries. We talked about MacKinnon last show. We talked about the minor injury we thought to JT Compher, but he's now out a month. But the Avs are still rolling. They're even dabbling with some Mikko Rantanen at center these days, here and there. You love to see that versatility from one of the best players in the league. But guys, I think the Alexander Barkov injury news, with him out week to week, that kind of throws a curve at one of the best fantasy teams in the league, the Florida Panthers, right?
Yeah, I mean, no question. When you play like Barkov does and you put up the points he does, it's going to be a big-time injury. But I think the good news for Florida is that they have so many different guys that can step up. Maybe not play, obviously, to the potential that Barkov can, but when you have the depth at forward they do, you can withstand these types of injuries. Looks at the other teams. Washington, who's been banged up all year, they've been able to withstand that, maintain their fantasy value. I see the same exact situation here for Florida. I just don't know, you know, beyond Lundell, if there's any one of their other forwards that you really want to pick up right now and invest in.
Yeah, first off, I agree with you, and I would say I didn't like the hit one bit. It's unfortunate that this happened, one of the better players in this league. But number two, I echo your sentiments, Rob. Like, there's just so much depth in Florida. I think they can rally around this. Even a guy like Sam Bennett can play center if they need it. I think Anton Lundell, I think you look in a fantasy world, he's probably the guy that gets elevated and promoted the most, at least into a top six look. So I think you take a flyer in Lundell. But again, I'm with you. Like, I like the depth that the Florida Panthers possess, that where even when you lose an Alexander Barkov, I don't expect this team to fall off the map. I still think they're going to be there because there's a lot of guys who can do it right now.
I think the, you know, Sam Reinhart thing is going to be a big storyline, because a lot of people are asking about him in fan questions, people that reached for him in their drafts and are a little disappointed by the performance so far, right? So, of course, you know, he scored, was among the league leaders in goals last year, playing center when Jack Eichel was out. He's played a lot of right wing in his career on Eichel's wing. But are they going to be just tinkering with this guy's lineup placement all season long? Do you guys still believe in the ceiling of Sam Reinhart for the rest of the season?
If I'm in a points league, yes, absolutely. I think he's still going to be, you know, a 65 plus point player. I'm not worried about that, especially when it comes to the assists. I think he's still going to rack those up. But what I've seen is a decrease in the category coverage this year from that player. And that's where I get concerned a little bit. Like, if you're in a format, you're only looking at assists or you're looking at points, that's fine. But if you're looking at hits, you're looking at shots and some of those more deeper categories, I think Sam Reinhart's a guy that has become sadly expendable up to this point in the season.
Yeah, I honestly think it's one of those things where, like, a player is getting acclimated to a new situation. I think it happens quite frequently, like in the NHL world, where it takes somebody a bit of time to get used to the new surroundings. So I really can't make like a full assessment on Sam Reinhart. I think certainly in a scenario like this, when you lose Alexander Barkov, your best player, I think it's the hope, the expectation that a guy they brought over from Buffalo, they paid a pretty penny for this guy. Like, they want him to step up from an offensive standpoint. So he's certainly another guy I would identify as somebody that we expect in the fantasy world to elevate their play. And I think it was a constant battle in Buffalo. Is he a center? Is he a winger? And I think the Florida Panthers will do their best to figure that out. But lucky for him and lucky for them, there's so much insulation and so much ability to move him around the lineup. Like, even a guy I think about a lot is like Patrick Hornqvist, how one game will be on the fourth line, one game will be on the first line. And I think versatility is bigger than we think it is in this day and age of the NHL, guys.
And I guess too, you know, going into this Florida thing a little deeper with Barkov out, like the only player maybe I'd be looking to maybe flip right now would be Spencer Knight. Obviously, you haven't had a lot of value from him. And that could be a guy where even if he does get some more starts, which he really hasn't been lately, you know, he might not get the goal support now with Barkov out. So maybe you look to cut ties there, but still you go back to last season and people that cut ties too early with Sorokin, like they got burned. So I think you just have to kind of take a deep breath here. Let it ride out. And if you are a Spencer Knight owner, yeah, you're probably disappointed because you put a lot of draft capital into that player. But I think this is a long-term move. And if you've invested in the Panthers, they are a long-term team. You can't really drop any of these guys. The only thing I would suggest doing is picking up Lundell in the short term. But other than that, just stand pat and ride the wave.
And Robbie and Nick, where does Lundell stack up for you among the top rookies this year? You know who the top couple of guys are. Of course, we know that Trevor Zegras is starting to get going for the Anaheim Ducks, which you'll love to see because our preseason expectations were sky high for him. But I think that Lundell is right in that same realm as like Jonathan Dahlin from the Sharks, Cole Sillinger from the Blue Jackets, Dawson Mercer for the New Jersey Devils. Now that Barkov is out, do you like Lundell more than all those couple of guys I mentioned outside of Zegras?
Well, I'll say, well, we'll finally start to see him a bit more. Like, quite frankly, I just haven't seen enough of Anton Lundell. When he's been in there, I think he's been excellent. But I think it's a really, really good placement. Like, I wouldn't put him on the periphery of challenging for the Calder at this point in time. I mean, it's quite clear the two guys in Detroit are far ahead, at least in my opinion so far. The guy we all thought was going to win is in the American Hockey League. So go figure, right? Like, it just shows you how long the season is. Like, and this is a prime opportunity for a player who has the pedigree to be in the top six, to elevate their play. So I think it's a good point in the fact that Anton Lundell can put himself more in this conversation for the Calder Trophy with the ability here. We'll see if he gets time on the power play. I know early on he has been playing on the power play, even you know, without Barkov here in practice the last couple of days. So that's something I'm obviously very interested in seeing if he gets on the power play. I know it's been Hornqvist over Lundell. Like, I think that depreciates his value a bit if he's not in the PP, but I think there's distinct opportunity to get in that conversation because for me, it's obviously Raymond and Sider and then everybody else, but I think they're waiting for that sort of Jason Robertson type to get in the conversation because last year was a perfect indication. How random was that? The couple guys that were involved in the combo in the second half of the year that we'd not expect at all, right, guys?
Yeah, and it came down to the wire almost, right? Like Robertson was playing so, so well, and Kaprizov almost kind of got hot and cold to end the season. So it made for like the perfect finish. For this one, anytime we bring up the Calder, I mean, it's just an opportunity to gloat about the two Red Wings guys. The fact that Lucas Raymond has 18 points in 18 games is quite simply unbelievable. And then Moritz Seider, I don't know if you guys saw that hit he put on against one of the Dallas players recently, but oh my gosh, like this guy can do literally everything. He's got 6 power play points, actually one more than Lucas Raymond this year. So those two guys, I think right now are a class of their own. That is tier one. Tier two, I think, is where Lundell comes in. 16 minutes plus for him a game is really impressive considering how many good NHL players and veterans are on that Florida squad. But I think when you look at that kind of center, plays two ways, I think it's going to be tough to see him really explode onto the scene points wise, especially when Barkov comes back short term. Yes, I think it'll happen, but I would say Zegras is probably the guy. If any rookie is really going to do what Robertson did last year, Nick, I think it's Trevor Zegras, who just probably needs a little bit more ice time, a little bit more trust from the head coach there. And then you'll see him put those points up.
Yeah, that's probably my prime challenger as well, guys. Aside from those two Red Wings players, at least right now, has to be Zegras. What a finisher the other night. The Anaheim Ducks have been a marvelous story. We all knew they had the goaltending, right, with John Gibson. It was more so defensively and more so offensively, I would say, from the last couple years, where they've never really been able to be that team to score 3, 4, 5 goals a game, and now it's routine for them. So you kick that into the overdrive, and they're just a tough team to play against right now. And among them has been sort of Zegras, how game in, game out, he's gotten better and better and better and better. And it seems to, you know, be a thing throughout this roster right now. Guys like Troy Terry and Adam Henrique and Ryan Getzlaf, everybody is producing. And I think you look at Zegras, the expectation was there, but the confidence is now there. And that's the scary part is. So I'm certainly looking at him. I've identified him as a player who's going to challenge for the Calder. And again, it's easy to forget, like, we're almost at your Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving, but I think there's just so much racetrack to go that it's my expectation that somebody we're not really talking about right now will be involved in that conversation at the end of the day.
Right. And Zegras is now all of a sudden in double digits in points with 10 and 15 games. Lindell, considering he's been mostly in the bottom six so far, not too shabby either with 7 points in 12 games. So maybe it could be one of those things where if he performs really well in an even bigger role, it'll be hard to banish him back to that third line, even when Barkov comes back. So maybe someone else might have to shift to the wing besides just Sam Reinhart. So you never know about that. But yeah, certainly the Anaheim Ducks are a team that you just mentioned, Nick, and we've been kind of gloating about them fantasy-wise for a few weeks now. 1 week, it was like, we're amazed at Terry and Getzlaf. The next week, it's like, oh, Henrique's on their wing. Now Cam Fowler and Shattenkirk are both in double digits. And then you even see, you know, some of their third liners chipping in, and Silverberg's been really productive as well. So, I mean, is this a team that is now approaching, Robbie, like your top half of your fantasy power rankings, where you would kind of anoint them as like anybody you can get from their top nine forward group is worth a stream?
No, I mean, I'm not going to go that far. I still think what Nick said is what everything that matters in this exact conversation, right? You can be pretty short-sighted and get super high on those type of guys, and that's all well and good. They deserve the accolades. They deserve the praise right now. When you expand this thing out over 82 games, it is an absolute grind, and you've got to be experienced. You've got to be ready to play night in, night out at this kind of level. Now, going off that, Pete, I know we got a question about Troy Terry on Twitter, and I don't think we've had a chance to ask you this, Nick, but there was an offer out there. Troy Terry right now sell high to acquire Ryan Nugent Hopkins. I would make that trade 100 times out of 100. I like Troy Terry. I don't need to go on about U.S. hockey here again, Nick, while you're on the program. I'll spare you that one today. But that's just a no-brainer for me, because RNH has been established in this league. He's been established in fantasy. Love what Troy Terry's doing, but I think you should capitalize if you can get a player of Ryan Nugent Hopkins caliber in return.
I know we got a couple of baseball players around here. Remember the name Mike Maroth with the Detroit Tigers? It was like 1-20 or something like that. Well, my comparison is Ryan Nugent Hopkins has like 1-19, 1-18 right now. Like he's not scoring, but he's picking up the apples. Like for sure I'm making that move. And I think in general, and I got some heat for saying I would fade Troy Terry and try to sell high, but I think you have to right now. And that goes for the entire Ducks roster, by the way. Like I've been trying to trade Kevin Shattenkirk. It's been difficult. People are catching on to me clearly, but I'm all about maximizing value, guys. You have to do so. I don't want to say there's no way, because we've seen the craziest things in the NHL world in like the last 5 years, which included an expansion team going to the Stanley Cup final. So never say never, but I just don't see a possibility where Anaheim is this good all season long, with exception of John Gibson. I think there's exceptional value in owning John Gibson right now, provided he stays healthy. But guys like Troy Terry and Henrique and Ryan Getzlaf, not so much Zegras, but I have to, you know, experiment and contemplate an idea of selling high. So yes, I'm with you. I would definitely take that deal for Ryan Nugent Hopkins 1-for-1.
If we're talking Troy Terry as a sell high, then Ryan Getzlaf with 18 points in 17 games, 5 on the power play and 50 shots on goal. That's not a guy that through the years has been known for his shot volume, but he's known for really good category coverage this year. So he's even got that footprint across the board where you can, you know, offer him as a sell high candidate in the later stages of his career, because Ryan Getzlaf, right, has not been fantasy relevant even the past 2-3 seasons.
One thing I've seen a couple bloggers write about, and that is a pretty good preface because it's bloggers, but they've been speculating that John Gibson might be a good trade candidate for the Anaheim Ducks to get some assets back in return. And I'm like scratching my head as to why they would even consider doing that. I mean, yeah, it might make sense if you're really looking at the long-term trajectory of this team, but John Gibson's only like 28 years old. He's got another at least 5-6 years left of being an elite goalie. I think this Anaheim Ducks team is at least proven, while we're saying sell high on some of these guys, they've at least proven they've in the conversation for the top half of the NHL. If they're not going to finish there this year, they'll certainly be there next year.
Well, I would say the bloggers are probably saying this before this season, because I think it was the expectation the Ducks were sort of in a retool. Like, you don't want to call it a rebuild, because, you know, the one thing with Anaheim, guys, and knowing a couple of people around the team, I think they're waiting for some of their younger guys to take that next step. And fortunately for them, guys like Troy Terry certainly have, right? Like, I think they knew what they had in these prospects. They're waiting for them to jump at the NHL level. And luckily for them, it's been every player. So I think you look at Gibson, I think the expectation was there, like, hey, we're not going to be a playoff team. Might as well maximize this guy's value. We know he's a Pennsylvania guy. You know, maybe Pittsburgh's a fit. How much do they trust in Tristan Jarry? But the one notable thing I would grab out of this whole hot streak, does all this make Rickard Rakell expendable, who's in a contract year right now, right? Because they've been doing this without Rickard Rakell in the lineup. They did it, you know, mostly without Jakob Silfverberg. You know, specifically when it comes to Rakell, does that mean this guy is expendable because you move a guy like Troy Terry up to the top six?
I think he's definitely expendable, and that's we're not expecting this infusion of youth this year, maybe in a couple of years, but the fact that they're doing this and like Drysdale's not heavily involved, and up until two games ago, Zegras wasn't heavily involved. Guys like Lundestrom and Sonny Milano and like all these guys are chipping in, and even Silfverberg was out for a little bit, and Silverberg's, even though he's kind of still in his prime years, technically he's like the old guard there. Like there are still a lot of guys on this roster that have been around for many years. Right? Hampus Lindholm has been there forever. Silverberg's been there forever. Getzlaff and Fowler. I mean, it's kind of moving away from those type of guys that we're used to seeing on those bland Ducks teams. And now it's these exciting new pieces that are going to be even better in the years to come, especially if a guy like Troy Terry can take this enormous jump after a lot of growing pains in the NHL and deliver like this so consistently. Point streak up to 15 games. Can you believe it?
Well, I can't. And I was just going to add too, like I put this tweet out the other day, guys, and I'm sure you saw it. It was like, if you were to tell me the Ducks are going to be 9-4-3 and Max Comtois was going to have one assist, I'd call you like nuts. Like that's a crazy thing for me, guys. How much are we talking about Max Comtois taking that next step this season? And he's been pretty much a ghost. So I think Anaheim deserves a lot of credit for not only scoring, but the volume of scoring. Like every night, you just don't know where it's going to come from. Right, Rob?
Yeah, that is crazy, especially because he did show flashes before being a pretty decent player, like 33 points in 55 games last year. It's kind of hard to see that go really quickly south. And then I wanted to respond to Pete's quick comment about Rickard Rakell and him kind of being expendable. I agree wholeheartedly that he is now. I just always worry about those players on the trade market because he has the kind of teams chase that what they used to be. And Rickard Rakell hasn't been that player since 2017-18 when he was an elite fantasy player. I just worry, Petey, that that's kind of, you know, has been necessarily, he's got a good contract to trade at the deadline, but I can't see a team really finding Rickard Rakell's old form if they do decide to pursue that.
I guess the one thing he would offer is some physical play in addition to his scoring touch. And that's something that always teams are vying for down the stretch of the season to complete their top six in pursuit of a deep playoff run. Also wanted to give a shout. NHL at the Rink had Cam Fowler on, one of the Ducks' seven players with 10 plus points this year. I was talking all things Anaheim Ducks and how they've been such a surprise this year in the NHL. So go check that out. One of our most talked about players in the fan question so far this week has been Roope Hintz. He's been getting it going with a four-game point streak. It's a guy like Zegras. A week ago, you might have been thinking about cutting the cord on a player like that. But of course, guys, he was near a point-per-game player last year, and I think he's kind of revitalized his fantasy stock in a matter of games, and it goes with the Jason Robertson return, right?
Yeah, it's funny. It pairs perfectly with that. And we were talking about that, guys, a couple of weeks back, the importance of Jason Robertson to this roster. And Dallas in general is just, I think, a team that we all expect to get clicking offensively at some point in time. Like 2 weeks back or maybe a week ago, we were wondering about, you know, the coaching staff or wondering about Jim Nill because just this team wasn't playing good enough, right? Like I saw them in Vancouver a couple of weeks ago. They didn't look good. The offense couldn't get going. I think it's been an extremely slow start for a guy like Alex Radulov because I think you look at that roster and say, hey, like there's significant depth. It's all about clicking. But now you look at Roope Hintz, he's starting to fire. I think they're expecting more offensively from a guy like John Klingberg. And then on top of that, the cherry on top of this whole thing is the conundrum in between the pipes. I just don't know how you hold Jake Oettinger out of the NHL much longer, comes back, posts 28 saves, gets the win. I still don't get the Braden Holtby signing, but so be it. But I think that's going to linger in the background of this team all season long too, guys.
I mean, Holtby was good for like the first four or five games, but they got no goal support at all. I mean, you cannot win that way in the NHL. And I just go back to last season, every single episode of this program, 3 days a week, we were waiting for Dallas to get going. And we kept saying, it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. Dallas can't score. They're averaging 2.57 goals per game. Rupe Hintz is a good player. He's on a 4-game point streak. I'd pick him up and stream him. No questions, as long as you don't have any other Dallas Stars on your fantasy team. But unfortunately, Dallas has created this brand of low scoring, low energy hockey. And what are they going to do? I mean, is Ben Bishop going to come back and stop 45 shots a game? And then all of a sudden they're going to win 1-0 hockey games. I just don't see that, PD, being a good recipe for not only fantasy success, but real success too.
I agree. And unless you're the only scenario where I would consider stacking multiple Dallas Stars players are if you're a roster owner of Miro Heiskanen, who has like 13 points in 14 games. Other than that, it's just a total mishmash of, like, you know, mediocre starts. And, you know, Joe, if you have a Joe Pavelski, he's expendable. You know, a Robertson, of course, I would have him. But as far as stacking, like, Robertson and Hintz, one person actually asked about that. What are your thoughts on a rest of season stack of those two players? I just don't know that I could buy into that right now, because there are just so many cooks in the kitchen right now in Dallas's offense.
Yeah, walking the tightrope for sure. I think they got to open it up like Anaheim, guys. Like, they remind me a lot of the Ducks the last couple of years, where it's like 2-1 every game. Let's start scoring some goals, right? Like, this is 2021. I don't know. Rob, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, I think you look at that roster, you say, wow, they can do something. But I think ultimately it's been a couple of years of this under – you know, what they have going, and it just hasn't clicked. It hasn't worked offensively, because I think there's so much potential, and that's what gets me lingering when it comes to picking up some Dallas Stars guys, and it just never hits. It never hits.
Even Columbus is a team you could compare them to and say Columbus is now suddenly ahead of them. I mean, look at the top 10 teams in goals for a game. Edmonton, obviously, number one. Florida, Colorado without all their guys in the lineup. Anaheim's number four. Carolina, five. Washington, six. St. Louis, seven. Winnipeg, eight. Columbus, nine. And Minnesota, 10, without Kirill Kaprizov doing much to start this season. Like, that is sobering, I think, if you look at the Dallas Stars lineup and just how little they've been able to get out of that forward group. And even last season, when some of their guys overachieved, like Pavelski and everybody, it's kind of remarkable how they still didn't find a way to get into the playoffs. So I think I'm out on that team, Petey. Again, I like Heiskanen. Klingberg, you could say, contract year type thing, fine. But I just wouldn't go beyond one Stars player on your roster, and that's including goaltender as well.
We did pick up in our joint league, Robbie, right, Ottinger, as a fifth goalie. So we just went there, baby. So it's a deep league, but we're deep at the goalie position. We're not taking anything for granted there. But yeah, Klingberg has been awful this year. No goals, three assists in 10 games. I have him in a points only league. I haven't had him in my lineup in weeks, and maybe since week one. He's in a contract year, kind of starting that thing off with a whimper. We'll see if he could turn things around. But yeah, as far as Dallas's offense, like you said, Robbie, I'd rather have Boone Jenner than Joe Pavelski, Jamie Benn, Radulov, Sagan, right? Hintz I'd have over Boone Jenner. But I think that speaks volumes about what you were talking about.
Well, and if Klingberg does get dealt, though, I mean, that's a player you're going to want to pick up in fantasy, obviously, if he goes to a team that just doesn't have that elite power play quarterback. Like, there will be value there. But again, as a fantasy manager, you have to ask yourself the question, how long am I willing to wait until that potentially does happen? The good news, Nick, is I was able to be patient with Marc-Andre Fleury of the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, that one, I am not confident that this is going to continue. I mean, they are allowing way too many shots, and their forwards aren't scoring enough goals still to keep them competitive. But do you make any sense of this Chicago winning streak with Coach King, I think, raffling off four in a row behind the bench?
Well, it's the initial boost. I put out the numbers last night. Just go have a look. All you Seth Jones haters out there, he's been an absolute stud the last 10 games, five games at least here, four games under Derek King. And number two, I have to add the hashtag fade the Kraken. I don't know what it's about Vegas right now, but they're always the definitive favorite against everybody at home. they've proven nothing. So I keep fading them. I keep winning. So thank you very much, Seattle Kraken. But I think that's just the boost that is attached to a team when you make a coaching change. And quite frankly, I just think Chicago was better than they showed early on this season. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, I'm with you, Rob. Defensively, they're a train wreck and it's going to catch up to them, but I'm going to ride the good wave right now. Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, one of the best goalies in recent memory, the reigning Vezina winner. So he's going to steal you a couple games. Patrick Kane's going to steal you some games. DeBrincat. I'm looking for a bit more from Jonathan Toews offensively, but I think the Hawks will be a team in the middle as opposed to at the bottom. So they're going to start winning some games here.
I could see that. I'm still not touching in deeper leagues, Kirby Dach. I'm not touching Kubalik right now, or Jonathan Toews, or anybody else on that defense. They're a little too top heavy. Those guys will get them back closer to the top 20 out of the 32 teams. Like we were saying right after the coaching change happened. That said, I'm still not sold on this. A couple of favorable opponents made things a little bit better. Obviously, the Blackhawks were dealing with so many things early on this season to make matters worse for their losing streak. So it was just kind of snowballing for them. But it's good to see them at least bounce back here and show that they're a little bit more than what they looked like.
So just wanted to ask, too, since we're in that conversation about Seattle, how do you guys feel about that team? I think they're disgustingly overvalued, and I'm not going to complain about it because I continue to win money off them. Do you have a reason why this is the case, guys? Like, I want to do like a thesis paper on this because I think it's ridiculous the value I've been getting on fading Seattle this season. But I think you look at that roster in general. Is there one player that sticks out that says, you know what, I got to have this guy on my team because I don't really feel that way right now?
Nick, I could write a dissertation about the breakdown of that expansion draft and how off the rails it got. When you're staring at the face of picking Vlad Tarasenko you somehow opt to not make that selection, it's just mind-boggling. And that's going to be one of those ones where, again, even in a business decision, why would you miss out on the opportunity to sell jerseys? What jersey are you buying right now and putting a number on it? I mean, you're not. Unless it's 99 Reese, you're not getting one. And then two, I'd have one of those, frame that one. But beyond that, it's like from a fantasy lens, you're having Yanni Gourde play 22 minutes a night. Jared McCann is playing 18 or 19. Like, those are the only guys that you want to have on your roster right now. Eberle's hot and cold. He's a good DFS guy. But to your question, Nick, directly, it's because of Vegas and their phenomena in year one. But the candid thing about Vegas, they actually had a good roster. So it's a totally different situation. And I think the books are just kind of catching up to the fact that how sobering it is that Seattle just cannot win hockey games. And even in that division, they are not going to win hockey games.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, anybody who was saying they had any appeal fantasy wise or in the betting market was trying to capitalize on what we thought would be a pretty bad division, but it's actually turned out to be one of the best divisions,
LA too,
if not the single best division. Even with Vegas missing all these guys, they've still been strong. They got Mark Stone back now. I mean, all the California teams are better than we thought. Calgary's better than we thought. Edmonton is a really strong, one of the strongest offensive teams in the league, obviously. So, like, all of a sudden, they're the bottom dwellers. The Coyotes aren't there anymore, right? The Kraken are not turning this thing around anytime soon, and they don't have the star power like Vegas did. Vegas got their star power from tapping into some of those third liners around the league that maybe deserve to be more like first or second liners, but they haven't seen enough of that from Jared McCann. You know, the only guy on the Kraken I would have right now is Jordan Eberle, plain and simple.
What about Philip Grubauer? Are you guys trying to get rid of him, trading him? What are you trying to do with him?
Maybe drop him.
Yeah, I think we're good. Like, I don't know if you guys have the commercial in the States, but I'd rebrand it. Fade the Kraken. You know, where the guy just yells at the screen, because I just look at this roster. I just think there was fear. Like, you know, myself specifically, I can speak for myself, analyzing that initial roster. I'm like, you just never know, because you look at Vegas when truthfully I was like, there's no depth. I don't know who's going to score goals for this team, and maybe they're going to be okay defensively, but I don't know who I'm rostering on that team right now. I've been teetering with Yanni Gourde, who's around a point per game. I think we sometimes forget that. Picked up some penalty minutes. He'll hit. He'll do a lot of different things for you, but I just don't see any consistency with this roster right now, guys.
And I'm not seeing enough from Vince Dunn. People ask questions. Sometimes they send us their picture of their roster, say, who can I drop? You know, pretty much if you see a Vince Dunn, he's certainly droppable. I've dabbled in Gourde and Jared McCann as well. I don't have Eberle on any of my teams. Thankfully, I don't have Grubauer on any of my teams because Robbie was all over fading him. I was all over fading Fleury. I do still think Fleury will have some value, especially if he's traded. But Grubauer is not going to get traded, obviously, after just that signing that big contract. So, and then the interesting thing for longer term, Vegas did so well the first year, and then they were able to attract the top free agents every single year and trade bait with Pacioretty and Stone and signing Pietrangelo, trading for Jack Eichel. That was kind of like, as they continued to cement themselves as a contending team, Seattle's going to have trouble if they don't have any stock as a contending team moving forward. So that's something that they could try to salvage here, is to, you know, they do have a well-rounded enough of a roster to be a competitive team. Maybe they become a more competitive team over the course of the season.
Let's stay in the region there and talk about the Canucks a little bit. One player is Elias Pettersson, who's done next to nothing in fantasy with 9 points, just 3 goals in 17 games. Not really loving those numbers, Nick. What do you think about Pettersson now with maybe a longer-term outlook in fantasy?
He's been the poop emoji this year, guys. Like, I watched him a couple times in Vancouver a couple weeks back, and you can't notice this guy. Like, how much money a year is he making, and you can't notice him on the ice? I think there's a big-time room problem in Vancouver. I think they're at a point in the season where they need a change if they want to make the playoffs. How many times have we seen it in recent memories? And that's nothing against Travis Green or nothing against the personnel or the GM, but I think they have to do something to get this team going, because I keep expecting them to bounce back. And maybe this is just me being guilty, betting on the Canucks night after night and losing money night after night. But I think the expectation is there for this roster. You need to make a tweak or they're going to lose this season in a hurry. But you look at Pettersson, he's just not driving the game the way he did. I think, number one, it's fair to comprehend he missed a lot of time last year, so I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt to get back up to snuff. But he's not controlling the game like he did a couple years back, and that's what worries me. When he was top flight and he was a guy, if you recall, we were talking about, hey, one day he's going to be in the heart conversation. The puck always seemed to be on his stick, and he was, you know, reacting to plays as opposed to the pressure he seems to feel right now. And he's not that loosey-goosey type guy that we've seen a couple years back. So number one for me is getting that confidence back for Pettersson. I don't know how that comes, but he's looked like a shadow of himself recently.
So has Brock Besser. I mean, it's been really the JT Miller show, like we talked about on the previous episode. And other than that, I think you might have to start looking at some of these guys a little bit differently in keeper leagues. I mean, I still view Pettersson as a keeper league asset. Quinn Hughes, still a top five keeper league defenseman in my book. And Thatcher Demko has proven he can shoulder a heavy workload and be a pretty efficient goalie through thick and thin, even when that team is having defensive lapses left and right. But even a Demko has to take a back seat to some of these other good goalies that we see in the top 10 or 15 of our rankings on NHL.com/fantasy. So you'll see Demko on there closer to 20 among goalies, sad enough, still worth having in all standard leagues, but he's taken a back seat. He's not one of the top flight goalies this year, and it's a result of his team.
I'm with you, Nick, on this one, because when you look at the roster, it's actually not bad. I mean, from a forward lens, like JT Miller's playing sensational. He's been above and beyond their most valuable fantasy asset. Bo Horvat's obviously a quality player. Nils Höglander was a great draft choice for them and really came on early and looks like he can be a 50 plus point player in the league, right? And then when you go down a lens, I mean, Connor Garland is a quality player. OEL, he's having a little bit of a bounce back from category coverage perspective, but certainly not a bad player, not what he was in Arizona. And then, you know, Quinn Hughes obviously is a star in this league as well. So they have enough pieces where they should be able to win hockey games. I liked Coach Travis Green and what he did a few years ago by getting that team into the playoffs, but pretty sorry, you know, the last couple seasons now, the response to having that achievement. So I think I'm with Nick. It's probably time to make a change. The personnel is not so bad. I think they just need to rework how they're deploying it.
And that was a fascination to me, guys, when I was out there, is the amount of people who thought there was a personnel problem on this roster. I just don't feel that way. Like, I think you look at some of the names and the potential depth, even having a guy like Pod Colson, who I think has had flashes of brilliance early on this season, they have depth. It's sometimes one of those things, and I always like to bring up the St. Louis Blues from a couple of years ago, where, you know, they found that depth and, you know, they made that coaching change, and, you know, the next thing you know, you're in the Stanley Cup final. I do firmly believe Vancouver is a team that could be sparked by a move like that.
And even Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who you mentioned, Robbie, is covering shots on goal really well, hits and blocks really well. I mean, he's only got 3 points in 17 games. So, I mean, he's even droppable at this point. I mean, if you're investing in him, it's like you're investing in like a Gudis or something like that. You know, that's what it's come to. Nothing against him. People roster players like that. And you may still want to keep Oliver Ekman-Larsson for that elite level category coverage. But from a points standpoint, it's just not there. So if you're in a points only league, do not find yourself with OEL on your roster moving forward.
Yeah, this is my first year in a bangers league. So I kind of now I'm like prioritizing players like Gudis and OEL somehow. And it's like my view is getting a little bit construed. So I agree, though, I would drop OEL in every other format, no question. But I do think it's like to the people that asked me about, you know, Pettersson and keeper leagues or Pettersson for this season, I think the skill level is just far too high on that player for you to really be looking to either drop or trade in a keeper. The return for me in a keeper would have to be the same level of player and the same age range. And there's just not many of them with that skill level. So I think I would just go back to what Nick said, just wait to see if they make a coaching change there and see if that helps him. I'm sure that it can't get much worse than what we've seen from him so far. So I think to answer that one, just be patient if at all possible.
And since we last talked, Kevin Hayes had a big game the other day, scored the goal and had that emotional moment. But I think he's definitely a player to consider based on, you know, early on, we were just saying he's coming back from injury, had that power play assist, but I think he's going to factor in to a lot for the Philadelphia Flyers and could be maybe one of those missing pieces that could keep them in playoff contention, because that's a flawed roster for sure. But even, you know, you start to see Ristolainen healthy, Keith Yandel whipping the puck around. I mean, they do have some puck movers. They do have some offense. And when you look at Carter Hart having a bounce back season and being a top 10, 15 goalie again, you can do a lot if a goalie's standing on his head and managing that workload.
Yeah, my guy Carter Hart has been phenomenal in my eyes, a top 10 fantasy goalie. I think he's might be playing himself onto the Canadian Olympic roster too. But I think that masks a lot. And we see that throughout the league where good goaltending can bring you a long way. And I think that's what's happening with Philadelphia. I am sniffing around on Kevin Hayes. Like, I think there is potential there in that top six. I know in the past he's had chemistry with a guy like James Van Riemsdyk. You know, curious to see what happens here with Cam Atkinson. Contract year, Claude Giroux. Philadelphia is another team where you always expect them to score a bit more than they do. But I think you're right in terms of guys who can move the puck. I know Ryan Ellis has been unable to stay healthy, so far through this season. But I think there's hope in Philadelphia, I think, for the first time. Maybe since, you know, pre-Niskanen, when they lost Niskanen, I think it was big for that roster. So I like Philadelphia. I just don't know where the offense will come from. But Kevin Hayes is certainly a guy I'm looking at to say, hey, maybe he can provide some sneaky value in category coverage for me.
I like Hayes. I would pick him up in a deeper league for sure. He's a quality player. He's got good skill. He's going to produce some points for you, maybe a little hot and cold, but I would want Philadelphia exposure right now. The only reason, Nick, I would say is I don't view Carter Hart as a top 10 goalie. We have him at 15 overall is just because what you alluded to, like Philadelphia is a better team than they were the last two seasons with their depth additions. But I don't know if that's enough to kind of patch up the holes of a sinking ship over an 82 game season, allowing 34 shots a game. When you have a guy like Carter Hart, who has proven he can fall off quickly before and then behind him, Martin Jones, I just don't think is the best, path forward for this team. But right now it's a good trend. You have to give Carter Hart a lot of credit and Philadelphia in general, especially because Ryan Ellis has been in and out of the lineup. Yeah. And when he gets back in and when he's fully healthy, that team can stabilize, Petey. But I always just kind of have an asterisk next to Philly is, okay, they could win five, but they can lose five just as quick.
Yeah, that's always been the pattern for that team in the past 5 years or so. And even Atkinson and Farabee as beneficiaries for line mate Kevin Hayes, I just think that like they have to find some consistency. Farabee last year led them with 20 goals, had like 10 multi-point games. But then in between, it's like you don't even want him on your team anymore when he goes through the dry spells. So is it really worth it to even keep a Farabee at this point? I'm leaning towards probably not. He's been tumbling a little bit in our rankings. The only glimmer is that Hayes is back. Maybe that can help him find a little bit more consistency. But That's the other thing with Philly, right? You get super high on one of their young players and then they disappear, and then you start questioning the whole thing all over again. So that's kind of been another pattern during those inconsistent times for Philly the past couple of years.
Yeah, it just shows you consistency. It's a big word in this NHL world, right? So, you know, guys like Farabee, they got to find it. They got to find it, man.
Well, it's consistent in life too. You gotta be consistent if you want to get anywhere in life. But let's just talk a little bit broader strokes here now. The three teams at the top of the NHL standings, I'm surprised by this. Florida tied for one with Washington, Carolina two, and then Toronto and New York tied for third, or for fourth, excuse me. Those teams, like when you pictured it going into the season, like Washington, people said was going to slow down. They're an absolute wrecking ball this year. Florida, we've all kind of predicted they'd be there, but Nick, Toronto, and I know you watch this team closely, like they kind of were a little shaky to start. Now Marner's hot. Jack Campbell is a top 10 goalie in the NHL without question. What do you see from this Toronto team that might be different this year if maybe you're looking to put some futures bets on them in the playoffs?
Now, personally, I still think they're a pretender. I think they show moments where they're an excellent team, and they show moments against Buffalo on the weekend where they have 2-2 goal leads and blow them and then score with 11 seconds left. So they're pretty much the same team. I think that they'll play when they want to play. You know, would I put money in them to go far in the playoffs? Probably not. Among them being the fact that they haven't won a playoff series in almost two decades. They always seem to find a way to lose when it matters. So I think until they prove that, I'm probably steering clear. And quite frankly, like it doesn't really matter, at least to me, what they do in the regular season from a fantasy point of view. It's excellent. The fact that Auston Matthews really hasn't been Auston Matthews so far, and this team is in the upper echelon of this league, I think obviously is a positive. He will get cooking eventually. Mitch Marner, as you mentioned, has been better. John Tavares has been much better this season than he was last season. Willie Nylander has been fantastic. I think maybe they need a bit more from Morgan Riley on the back end, who signs that lucrative contract a couple weeks back. And Jack Campbell, like that's what I was getting to earlier on. I wonder if Jack Campbell, guys, is playing himself onto the American roster and Thatcher Demko is playing himself off that roster, Rob.
I could 100% see that. Gibson as your number one, Campbell as your number two. That's going to win games in no matter what format, no matter what sheet of ice you're playing on. But Petey, I think I would just say this. I like what I saw from William Nylander, the fact that he's leading that team in shots on goal. He's got 64 shots. I like that he's kind of changed his game. I think this team is a little bit different. You know, I've been high on Toronto in the past and always get burned for it. So I don't want to get too high here, but I can at least say I like what I've seen so far, that they've been able to kind of smooth things out early on.
Yeah, I mean, what they've done so far has been encouraging, that they overcame the slower start, but where they stand right now is exactly where like the Anaheim Ducks stand, and we're approaching American Thanksgiving. And, you know, what does that really mean? Okay, the Leafs will be in the playoffs again. Are they built to win a playoff series against Tampa or Florida? I still say no. So I still just need to see it before I can get back in on the Leafs hype train. But yeah, when you look at the top of the standings right now, you even see a team like the Rangers, top five in points percentage in the NHL. Am I encouraged by that? Yes. Do I think that they're going to go on a deep playoff run and go to the, no, I don't. I don't think the Ducks will either. And I don't think the Leafs will either. That's just my hunch. This is very early still, not even 2 months into the season.
My thing with Toronto is at least they have two top tier centers in the NHL, and Tavares is playing like one this year. And that's usually what makes a team go far in the playoffs, is having two centers firing on all cylinders. So like, I'd rather sit here and make the case for Toronto than the Rangers, which you guys know I would never make the case for right now. Sammy Blais, tragic. He's out for the rest of the season. Like that trade, as you and I have talked about before, Petey, it looks worse and worse, but now, you know, tough that Sammy Blais out. He's a heart and soul guy. But credit to the Rangers too. I mean, again, you know, I wouldn't be placing too many futures on either one of these teams. They both have somewhat similar concerns, but if I had to give the edge, I'd certainly give it to Toronto, that they can at least win one round this year, which again, the bar is low.
It's very low when you lose to Montreal, who's one of the worst teams in this league, although we know what's wrong with Montreal. But I think the other thing to watch for in Toronto, more so in the regular season, is keeping Jack Campbell healthy and rested, because Peter Mrazek, love the guy, but same old story, can't stay healthy. He's very anti-Ronta in that respect. Good goalie, just can't stay healthy. He's injured again. They got a rookie in Joseph Woll, and the only reason why he's up there right now is because their third stringer, Michael Hutchinson, is not an NHL goalie. They continue to put him out there. He continued to get lit up. They can't do it anymore. So that's my concern. I think from a goalie point of view for the Maple Leafs is how much can Jack Campbell play this season, because he's been tremendous. I think as we speak, the best save percentage for qualified goalies in this league right now. He's been remarkable, but I think they got to be careful with this guy because he's no longer a spring chicken. It's not like he's 25. It's his first go at being a number one goalie in this league. So I wonder about that. Like they might need to go and look and find something elsewhere there.
Yeah, I hear you for sure. Nick, one last thing for me that I wanted to touch on here. Big storyline lately as the Islanders are kind of going off the rails a little bit. Yeah. Their 13 game road trip is officially over. They're going to be heading back home for their first ever game at UBS Arena on Saturday against the Flames. But where they stand after that trip, you can't blame them too much, I think.
No.
But they are seventh worst in team points percentage. And a really rough stretch right now for the Islanders. Futures wise, are you looking at this as an opportunity to buy low on that Islanders team that I know is near and dear to you?
Love my Islanders. I'm not calling it a trip because I think they went home like 17 times. Like I thought it was ridiculous how they'd have one game a week for like a month straight, right? So they went home. It wasn't a road trip, but I get it. I think sometimes you want home cooking. You want the ability to go to the arena on a game day and just play in your home barn. I think they did exceptionally well with that schedule. It was favored against them. From a fantasy standpoint, the Islanders are not really a team I've ever gone near, you know, with exception of Matthew Barzal, with exception of their goaltending, which I remain high on. So I think from a buy low opportunity, certainly Barzal, and certainly Varlamov, I don't think you're going to get value in a Sorokin trade right now because I think he's been tremendous. And I wonder if Sorokin takes that next step and he's maybe the 60-40 guy as opposed to 50-50. We all thought it was inevitable. I think it happens this season. He's so supremely talented. But outside of that, Anders Lee is a guy I noticed has been dropped a lot now, almost below 40% last time I checked. So until they can prove that they can provide offense routinely, and maybe it's because the lack of games early on this season, I don't know if I can go near the Islanders. I would love Tarasenko in an Islanders jersey, by the way. I'll just put that out there.
That would make me get back in on that team. I still like PD. I agree with you, though. I like where your head's at. I would put futures on that team right now. It's that one team. You don't want to play them in the playoffs. And Nick, what you said earlier about Toronto, like the regular season doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter for the Islanders either. It doesn't matter if they're the eighth seed, the first seed. They're going to be a tough out either way. Now, two last things from me. One, we just got word Ryan Ellis is actually out 4 to 6 weeks now. So he's probably out until 2022. That is a big blow there for Philadelphia, as we were just praising them. And then secondly, Nick, one last fan question I think is interesting, because Leon Draisaitl now has 17 goals in 15 games. He's got three out of his past four games with at least two goals in each one of them. It's ridiculous. Is there any way Draisaitl beats out McDavid in points this year?
Well, firstly, I want to apologize to every fantasy listener and watcher out there for having McKinnon 2 and not Draisaitl 2. To answer your question, you know, if it were me, I would say yes, because I think Draisaitl, this is the best I've ever seen Leon Draisaitl. But to be fair with your question, I think there's always that caveat, Connor McDavid, and I think it's McDavid's award to lose again for however, you know, I think the only way Draisaitl gets it if he like doubles him in goals, like it just, it's impossible because every... Like you just look at McDavid and you look at what he does and you're like, there's no one even close. So for everything I love about Draisaitl, I just don't think he has a chance, sadly.
I disagree. I think there is somebody close and it's Draisaitl. I mean, where, like 3 years ago, he had more points than McDavid, I believe, 3 or 4 years ago. So it has happened before.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the immaculate Connor McDavid. I agree with you on that, but could Draisaitl score more goals? Could Draisaitl score more points when it's all said and done? Could he have more power play points? Yeah, he can to any of those three and maybe even all of them. So Draisaitl is like the 1B to Connor McDavid, but it could tilt back to 1A. You never know.
He's on pace for 50 power play goals this year. So if that continues, I'll give him all the awards if that holds to be true. And then one other comment, I hate to be the guy that brings up plus minus, but Draisaitl's plus 11, McDavid's plus 2. What is going on there, right? So again, really boomer stat. Can't believe I'm referencing plus minus on the program, but just like little things, and it's fun in a fantasy world to kind of pick apart this. But I would say it's definitely McDavid's to lose if I had to answer that.
You should split the award in half and give it to both of them. How about that? And fade Koskinen. That's my last word on the show. Fade.
No. Disagree. Koskinen. He's been my best waiver wire pickup to date, Nick. I am never dropping him.
How many games in are we?
And I'm sold on Mikko Koskinen in that contract. Take it to the bank.
They need a goalie or they're not winning anything.
Contract year, Mikko Koskinen.
Is that the narrative?
He'll take you to a certain point. I don't know if he'll take you over the hump in the first round, but we'll see. It seems like he's definitely having the best season of his career so far. So, Nick, thanks for joining us. Follow Nick at the Golden Muzzy on Twitter. And, Nick, everybody follow what you got going on for Sportsnet.
Yeah, just writing my weekly mailbag on Friday and my 20 fantasy thoughts on Sunday. And keep up the great work, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Anytime, man. Great to see you. So for Nick Alberga, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you for a one-show week next week because it's Thanksgiving. So we'll be at you week 7 waiver wire on Monday with James. And then everybody enjoy your holiday. But we'll talk to you on Monday, NHL Fantasy on Ice.